Welcome to Mobile Mastermind Sessions by SmartX. Trends, insights, and updates from the industry brains of the programmatic advertising ecosystem.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Matthias. Thanks for joining us in Mobile Masterminds. We're very happy to have you. How are you doing?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on this podcast, Pau. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And I think this is the first time we are recording it. So pretty excited.
Yeah, same here. For the record, me and Matthias, we actually worked together in the past. So we're really excited to have him here and deep dive into gaming and DSPs, some two hot topics. So before, for the audience, a little bit about yourself, Matthias, can you tell us something about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Matthias Würdemann. I'm working as a senior online marketing manager for InnoGames, a developer and publisher of InnoGames, located in the beautiful city of Hamburg in northern Germany. I'm 31 years old and I'm currently living close to Hamburg together with my girlfriend, our two kids, a dog and a cat. So quite busy household. So in case you hear some weird background noises, I already apologize. Yeah, and I started my career 2014 at InnoGames in the performance marketing department. The first couple of years I focused on social ads, so I took care of the user acquisition campaigns on mostly Facebook, but also other social networks like Pinterest and Twitter. And in 2020, so more than 2 years ago, I switched from the social ads team to the search and display team to focus on programmatic advertising outside of the walled gardens. And yeah, this is basically what I'm still doing.
Okay. Here at InnoGames. So you guys have the team inside inside another team in charge of also Google.
Right. So right. We have four different performance marketing teams. So one team is social ads, who's focusing on user acquisition campaigns on social networks. Then search and display team, which is now my team, which is taking care of all search campaigns, Google UAC and programmatic. And then performance networks, who are directly running campaigns on the networks, and a media team who is doing all the classical media ads.
Okay, real nice, real nice. But before we get more into like the how you guys work at InnoGames, tell us a bit more like why going into UA in the first place? Like how did it come to your attention?
So yeah, to be honest, I never heard about UA before joining InnoGames. So after my bachelor's degree, I wasn't really sure what to do. So should I continue studying or start working and do my master's degree a bit later? Or I didn't really know what to do. But as it happens, I stumbled upon a job offer from InnoGames. And back at that time, they were looking for a dual master's student in performance marketing. So I already gained some experience in a marketing agency who was doing classical marketing, so TV, print media, billboards, and so on. But I couldn't really imagine what performance marketing was about. So I accepted the job offer, and after joining InnoGames and getting introduced to the user acquisition stuff, I was really excited. So what got me so excited was that I was not only, or the job itself was not only about approaching the customers with the right creative, but also having control over or about where and when you reach your audience, right? So the best thing about it is basically that you can also kind of measure the success of your campaigns instantly. So you see how many people saw your ad, how many of them clicked on it, how many got into the game, and how they behave in the game, right? So you know how the retention rates of users are, how many of them decided to pay, and so on. And now 8 years or more than 8 years later, I'm still very excited about my job. So it's basically combining the advantages of classical advertising and adding some extra benefits like the measurement.
Yeah, I think the UA is amazing. I've actually worked in other verticals before UA, and I think UA is great. And if you've been working in service since 2014, so you've seen the recent changes, like all the different stuff when Facebook was like not really working, and then PerchUp, the DeviceCraft, and IDFA. So it's like constantly you have changes that make your life, I'm not going to say interesting, but at least it's dynamic and you have to learn new stuff. You always have to be updated. I think it's a great vertical to work in, especially if you like digital, right? And it's, I think others might be a bit more stagnant and, you know, slow and hard to develop. And I also know InnoGames well, and I know that you guys take UA pretty serious. You also build products in-house. So it's, I've been in a couple of companies, and I also work with a lot of gaming companies. And I would say that InnoGames is one of those that really they take it professionally, you know, like they really know what they're doing. Yeah. And I think it's a great place. Like a great UA university, so to speak. No? So 8 years there is a great time, man. You're lucky, to be honest. And how about gaming? Do you game yourself?
Yeah. So in my youth, I used to play a lot of games, and basically all kind of games. So it's all started with Nintendo 64 and games like Legend of Zelda, Mario, and all the classics, and then a bit later also started to play Grand Theft Auto, Halo, FIFA, Rainbow Six, and so on. So gaming was definitely a big part of my life.
Yeah, of course.
At least until I turned 15, 16 and discovered other things to do in my free time. But nowadays, so after finishing my dual master's degree a couple of years ago, I decided to play a bit more, but I got kids, and now the time is limited again, and it's really hard to find time to sit down and play a game.
It is.
What I am doing is that I'm playing free-to-play mobile games on my phone or in the browser stay in the picture, right? And apart from this, it's really hard to find time for gaming currently.
Yeah, browser games, I like them a lot as well, these idle browser games and all that. So you mentioned that you've worked also in a couple of big channels, also social and DSP, right?
Right. So most time I spent on social. So mainly worked on Facebook and Instagram, and some smaller campaigns on Twitter, Pinterest, and Snapchat. And then after joining the search and display team, I started to focus more on DSPs, so mobile DSPs and desktop DSPs. And in between, I also ran or took over the Google UAC campaigns for, I think it was 3 months or something like this.
Oh, nice. UAC is a bit of a black box, but also has a lot with programmatic when you buy from Atmov, no? For instance, from that supply. There's a lot of overlap as well. And in terms of between, let's say, the big ones, Facebook and DSPs, I know you currently work in the DSP side, but is it very different? How would you?
It depends. So if we talk about browser, there are a lot of differences, I would say. If we talk about mobile and then more machine learning driven DSPs, it's quite similar to, for example, Facebook's AAA campaigns or Google UAC. So you basically just decide on in which country you want to run your campaign and which creatives you want to use, and the budget, of course, but then that's it, right? So then, I mean, on DSP side, you get a bit more insight, depending on the partner, of course. But some partners have a very high level of transparency where you get information about the exchanges you are running on, the placements, the apps, and so on. And I mean, on Google, it's a bit harder to get. I mean, you know also the placements like YouTube and so on, but not to the same level as you can get the data from DSPs, right? And on desktop, I would say it's much different because you have so much more reach and so much more opportunities to use first-party data, second-party data, third-party data to set up targetings, to be creative and so on. This is something you don't really... I mean, you can also be creative on Google, for example, when you use or run GDN campaigns. But there are some limitations, right? And from my point of view, you don't have those limitations or on desktop DSPs, right?
It's true also that the majority of the desktop DSPs, or the majority, or some of them are self platforms, right? And you can do you can play around much more. And the majority of the mobile DSPs tend to be managed, or at least if you want them to work, unless you know exactly what you're doing, you have a very specific goal, they tend to be managed. We offer both, but we see majority of clients asking for managed, actually. So it is a trend, whereas a desktop is different. And I think in desktop, you guys are one of the few direct advertisers that actually work with DSPs, so to speak, in gaming, because normally these DSPs work with agencies, right? They don't work with so many direct advertisers. So even they are surprised that you guys are able to pull everything off, like understand the desktop supply. And we are mobile here at Desmatics, but I've also done desktop, and I think desktop is pretty interesting as well. And there's a lot to learn. In fact, a lot of people say, hey, mobile is the future, blah, blah. But if you look at it, desktop has been way ahead of the curve in many things ahead of mobile, like supply path or header bidding, things like that. In desktop, they figured that out a long time ago. And in mobile, they're still circling around topics. So I would say that's a myth. But of course, the future of gaming, since we play in the phone, is mobile. But desktop is still big, I know. Yep. Yeah. We run mobile web, and we see a lot of performance there as well. So it is for sure an interesting inventory. Okay, so you currently run DSPs, right? You work with DSPs and you run campaigns for mobile and desktop.
Right, yeah.
That's really interesting. So tell us a bit more about, we'll go back to the DSP topic maybe later, but let's talk a bit more about InnoGames. Tell us a bit about this interesting company from the lovely city of Hamburg.
Yeah, so it all started, I think the first idea of InnoGames was born in the year 2003 already, when the two brothers, Eike and Hendrik, Hendrik is still our CEO, started to develop the browser game Tribal Wars together with their friend Michael. And due to ever-increasing popularity of the game, they decided to work full-time on the development and operation of browser games, and founded InnoGames as a company in 2007. And 1 year later, in 2008, InnoGames launched the second browser game, The West. And then another year later, Grapolis became InnoGames' third game to be released on the market.
If my math is right, then this game's been live for 15 years?
Yeah.
All right. And it's still kicking.
Tribal Wars, the first game, is still up and running. And still players. So we don't do any active marketing for this game anymore, but... it's still on the
has
market.
A strong community, I guess.
It does. Yeah.
That's how it still lives. It's crazy, especially when you see games now going, mobile games, way shorter lifespan, but this is 15 years is a lot.
It is, especially in the gaming industry. There are very few games which are on the market and still played for such a...
Exactly. But after Grapolis, you guys still had to come the hit, no? Because these games were big, but they were not a hit, if I'm not mistaken, and then came the hit.
The big hit was probably Forge of Empires. Also then our first mobile game. I think the iPad and iPhone app was released in 2015. So it's also available on mobile since now more than 7 years. And yeah, then in 2016, InnoGames announced revenues of 100 million euro, and Modern Times Group, a Swedish entertainment company, started to acquire a significant share of InnoGames, which then, 1 year later, again, got increased to 51%. And the last big milestone in the InnoGames history was in November 2019, when we marked 1 billion euro total lifetime revenue for our entire games portfolio.
Great numbers, big numbers.
Yeah. And pretty strong development, I would say.
So you guys belong also to MTG, right? And MTG also owns eSports and also, if I'm not mistaken, Hutch Games and Kongregate from the US, no? Hutch Games is in London, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we don't own the eSports part anymore.
But, okay.
We have a couple of gaming companies belonging to MTG. So one of them is InnoGames, of course. Then we also have Kongregate, Hutch Games, Ninja Kiwi, and PlaySimple.
Oh, PlaySimple, nice. Okay, fantastic. And you guys work with them?
We start to improve our collaboration. So we are doing some knowledge exchange and working on establishing internal reporting systems for everyone to use. So I would say we are starting to work a bit more closely together and have some projects also ongoing to improve the collaboration between all those companies.
Nice, great stuff. So after you guys released Forge of Empires and that was like the hit, what other games do you guys have live?
So currently we have 10 games in the market, 4 classics, so The West, Trial Wars 2, and Grapolis. And then we also have Warlords, Forge of Empires, and Alvenar, and our latest releases, which made it to commercial launch this year, Rise of Cultures and Sunrise Village. And currently we are running UA campaigns for 4 of our games. So for Forge of Empires, Alvenar, Rise of Cultures, and Sunrise Village.
Elvenar as well, that's really nice. I really like that game as well. You guys have a lot of titles live, and UA for 4 titles, for big titles is a lot. So yeah. I can imagine.
I mean, in between it's a bit more because we also do the soft launch campaigns and so on. So yeah, but 4 games is also quite a lot.
I can imagine. And what are the new, like, what is your new hit then? Like, would be Rise of Cultures?
Yeah, I would say that Rise of Cultures is definitely our current hit game. So this year we still invested a bit more of our marketing budget on Forge of Empires, but Rise of Cultures is coming close. And yeah, as mentioned, we went into commercial launch for this game beginning of this year, and it was our first successful commercial launch of a new game after Elvenar in 2015. And the next,
really happy then.
Can
you imagine?
And I mean, the next step for Rise of Cultures is now to launch a browser version of the game.
So, okay,
the soft launch for this,
the opposite, going browser now.
Yeah, so since we still see quite good results from our other browser titles, we decided to also work on a browser version for Rise of Cultures, and now let's see how it goes.
And the majority of your games don't, I mean, some have ads, some don't have ads, right? It's mainly IAP, in-app purchase.
By now, most of our mobile games, so at least the ones we are running campaigns for, have in-app ads. So, and the share of revenue coming from in-app ads is also increasing, but
I would say overall, it's still mostly most of the revenue is coming from in-app purchase.
Okay, yeah. In mid-core, we see that a lot. IAP tends to be, of course, stronger.
You are listening to Mobile Mastermind Sessions with Marex. Stay tuned if you're ready to grow.
Okay, and could you share anything about the launches, the new launches that you guys are running, or is that secret for the time being?
We currently have no launches running. So there are, of course, some planned, and since we're a gaming company, there are, of course, games and development, but nothing to announce here.
Okay. I just wish you guys the best in all the new launches, but the already that you have Rise of Cultures is a lot, because with that hit, you can still be for years. And I've played the game. I really like it. It's really nice. It's a really top game. I have to be. It's AAA, you know, inside this city building. It's really, really good. Yeah. Okay, and now maybe going back a bit to the DSP story. You mentioned you work in Facebook teams, in social teams, sorry, and then in DSPs. It must be a big difference, because Facebook in gaming, it is pretty big, and DSPs, let's be honest, are not that big compared to social, right? At least in budgets. I don't know how you guys manage budgets, but I can imagine that social or other channels, they have much, much higher budgets. How was it to change to a much lower budget coming from the top budget channel?
How was it? It was great, I would say. not because I had much lower budget, but because I could basically start from scratch, right? And there is a lot to explore when it comes to DSP. And you don't always need the big budgets to really test stuff and identify promising placements and so on. So for me, it was really a good switch. So coming from the established Facebook universe, where everything is kind of clear, and back then Facebook was already starting to switch to AAA campaigns. So introducing the Google black box in the Facebook universe, where you don't really have much insights and room for optimization. I mean, creative optimization is still a big part there, but apart from this, so trying out different audiences and stuff like this is not really possible on the mobile side anymore. So I think from the timing perspective, it was really great, because moving from Facebook, where the options got less and less, and entering the DSP universe, where the options are basically endless, was a really great step. And of course, it took some time to learn and to get into or dive into a new world. Because you have to understand the tech stack. How does programmatic advertising actually work outside of the walled gardens? What options do you have? What options make sense? So as you already mentioned, right? So you can go for managed, you can go for self-service, you can build your own bidder. You can do a lot of stuff, and in the end, it's more about your work. When it comes to success, cool campaigns, in contrast to Facebook or to Google UAC, for example, where, I mean, you can do stuff, but in the end, it's the algorithm who is responsible for good performance or bad performance. So what you can do there is increase, decrease budgets, or try new creators, or optimize for different goals and so on. But in the DSP universe, you can do a lot of stuff. And in the end, it's your responsibility if the campaigns are profitable or not. Of course, product also plays a big role, but just looking at the campaign perspective, right? So, and this is something I really like about working with DSPs.
Yeah, the freedom's there, especially if you go self. And from the internal, even if it's managed, when we run the campaigns in the DSP, is pretty incredible. I also had a similar path, like you say, going from social to DSP. And I totally agree with what you said. It's exactly like that. The other one is like you sit on the Ferrari and the race and that's it, you know, and the Ferrari will take care of more. And you are, and in DSP, you're kind of like in a different position in the pit and with a different car. And that's the main thing.
Basically, you have to build your own car.
You have to fix the car on your own, basically, you know. And the other one is like it breaks as well, but breaks less or something. Facebook did a great job, not going to lie, no, being able to pull that out. Also, kudos to them. So you work with many different DSPs, and how do you actually select them? How do you come up to, because I bet you that you're approached with by many different DSPs. How do you tell which ones are worth testing and which ones are, hey, this is not going to work out for me?
That's a really good question. So, when it comes to finding new DSP partners to work with, we have compiled a catalog of criteria reflecting different topics such as targeting options, inventory integration, service level support, and so on. So from our experience, at least, yeah, I can tell that even if it seems like all DSPs have access to the same inventory, in reality, there are a lot of differences. You know, when you discuss with other people about programmatic advertising, there's often the question if you need more than one DSP. And I would say definitely yes. I mean, of course, again, depends a bit on your product,
incremental.
Your strategy.
But, it's incremental. Adding a new DSP at the size of the DSPs, it's incremental. It's not going to jeopardize the other campaigns.
Yeah, exactly. And you also have to think about, I mean, DSPs have to pay to listen to impression, right? And at least, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but my thinking is that this is the reason why they have to focus on some inventory, right?
Vertical, so exactly.
Yeah, so some DSPs might, for example, work better for native supply, others on video and so on, and then some DSPs are better for the big branding companies. Others work for, I don't know, travel and insurance, and others then for gaming. And within gaming, there's still a difference because some DSPs might work for
hyper-casual.
For a certain type of game. Yeah. And then others, I mean, we see this on our end as well, that we see quite different performance by game and DSP.
Exactly. So,
that's why it's definitely worth testing more and getting back to your question.
How do you tell?
How do you tell? You can't really tell. So in the end, it's always about throwing money at it and see if it works or not. But of course, you can have some criteria to really identify or at least get a sense of if there is potential or not. So questions we then ask are like, has the DSP exclusive inventory sources for you or for us then in this case to offer? Is it possible to target specific apps or app categories? Do they have gaming specific targeting options? And one very important question is also if they can use our first party data to, for example, create lookalike audiences. And so on. Yeah. So we have a long list of criteria, and but even if you go through this list and ask the DSPs if they can do stuff, most of them will tell you yes. And in the end, you still end up with a quite big list of potential partners. And then it's more about soft facts like how do we evaluate the campaign managers? What kind of service level do we expect them to offer us and stuff like this? But looking at the hard facts, it's inventory, targeting options, data, so first party data, maybe third party data integration, and if they have something which sets them apart from other DSPs and is or could be useful for us and our games.
Yeah, from the in-app perspective, from the partner, from the seller perspective, we see that e-commerce and gaming, those two are the most demanding clients, no? Gaming specifically, they're really demanding. And my theory is basically, if the gaming doesn't breed, if the DSP doesn't breed gaming, doesn't understand gaming, if they're not focusing gaming, they're not going to be able to pull it off. Or it's going to be extremely hard because of what you mentioned about the supply, product roadmap. Are they really focused on doing gaming products? Like custom product page, is it important for gaming? Do you have it or not? And audience setting, no, and things like that. They're this gaming is specific. And so I completely agree that it's just telling if these guys know what they're doing with gaming or not. That's how, being on your perspective, what I saw at the end. No? Because even very big DSPs with a lot of, let's say, good stuff, they didn't get gaming because they were not running it, you know, and then you would say, hey, so it really depends. It really has to be like a bit specialized. And what are the biggest challenges that you would say you find while running gaming campaigns with the DSP? Is it like a creative or is it things like reporting or just performance is not there? Like, what are the main challenges?
On mobile, I would say main challenge is to find the right partner that fits our product. Why? Because on mobile, we are at least currently based or mostly using machine learning DSPs. So yeah, algorithm based. So they predict the likelihood of the user to make a purchase within your game and so on. So here it's about finding the right DSP partner
completely
algorithm for our product. And on the desktop side, where we do a lot of contextual targeting, it's the biggest challenge is finding the needle in the haystack, basically, because you have so much things you can do and it's very hard to identify promising placements. Biggest challenge here is to find those placements, and this we do by utilizing our first party data, use third party data and so on, because it's really hard to do it just by testing, just simply because there are so many options to run your campaigns on. This is our
and on mobile
our two challenges, yeah.
Adding to that, on mobile, on top of it, is that Android is still with guides, with identifiers. So you can still work with those DSPs that find you the pay users, so to speak, device graph, no? But on iOS, it's contextual. So it's quite a difference. But I also bet that you're probably running a lot of DSPs on iOS, not using SKAd, but maybe using Probabilistic. So that made it easier now with the transition, no? Compared to the Facebook guys, for instance, that they had to deal with SKAd or Facebook, how Facebook handled it. So I think we were talking earlier, no, that how everything has changed since 2014. So many changes that now have it easy here, now have it hard here, now this works, now this doesn't, now changes, and there's like a lot of movement. But we see the same, no? Contextual iOS, we think, is the future. And that's what we put our stakes on, you know, although Android, of course, but iOS contextual, that is the feature in our opinion. I see. But in terms of like creatives, you guys use very specific creatives for TSP, or would you say maybe creatives you use in networks, iron source and such, they work, but we're using quota, maybe it doesn't work here, right? Or does it work? How does it work?
We are trying to use channel-specific creatives, but what we are seeing or were seeing in the past years at least was that what works on Facebook also works on most of the other channels. But if we talk about stuff like TikTok, for example, we use different creatives definitely, because our top performing creatives in marketing don't work on TikTok. And looking at DSPs in the desktop, it's a bit more placement specific. So if we run in a gaming context, we use probably different creatives than in a news context or something like this.
Exactly.
And on mobile, we are currently mostly running in-app campaigns, and those apps are gaming apps. So we are using the creatives, mainly the creatives that also work on Facebook or other channels, and don't have really inventory specific creatives. But this is also due to the fact that we don't, or at the moment, only run with machine learning DSPs, and don't really optimize too much on placement level. But we are testing all the time, so testing with video, static, playables, also recently quite a lot of testing, and always trying to find best creative for our
audience. Of course. I do think in DSP the killer creative will work in regardless of the channel. Maybe TikTok is a very, very specific, but you guys had this creative with the guys in the construction, I remember, many years ago, and it worked everywhere. It doesn't matter where you put it, that works. And it's a good example, no? The good creative just works overall.
But we also noticed, especially in the DSP context, that the top spending creatives are not necessarily the top performing creatives. Because the algorithm, I mean, same issue on Google and Facebook, right?
Yeah.
So the algorithm is basically looking at, CTR and then maybe install to action rate or something. If you're
and volume.
Towards purchase and volume.
Matthias and volume. I think that they also try to push volume, you know, so they have to pick. And at the end, this creative might bring more volume, but maybe not so post-install event performance, but adding up everything, you know, something like that.
Exactly what I wanted to say, right? So if you then look at the lower funnel KPIs and ROAS in the end, it turns out that the top spending creative is not the one with the best ROAS. And your performance could have been way better if you would pause your top spending creative.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always the case, but sometimes it's definitely the case. So it's, from my perspective, really worth digging into this creative
completely.
Topic even more. Especially since you don't really have a lot of other levers in those black box environments, right?
Google
and Facebook, it's the only thing you can do is basically optimize your creatives.
Mm-hmm.
And
And I do think that the freedom that the creative testing gives you on DSPs is unparalleled, because you can pretty much do anything. As you mentioned, hey, I want to go for this specific placement in this app. And then you can really test really cheap and then spread the knowledge around other systems. And that's something is not done a lot. It's actually the opposite. They test on Facebook and then they bring it here to DSPs. When I'm saying, hey, no, here you have actually much more freedom. You can actually really mix the end cards that you want with the videos exactly, with the type of rendering you want in the SDK that you want. It's way, way better, but we see that constantly, no? And I think that doubling down on creative optimization is as important as, let's say, pacing and algorithms that have to do with budgeting and CPA optimization, retention optimization. Creatives is so important and sometimes overlooked by many DSPs.
It's the one thing that sets you apart from all other ads.
Exactly.
See, right? So
exactly.
I would say it's the most crucial part of campaign optimization.
Now we're testing with the custom product pages, and you really see the significance and what you can do on browser, because you are actually doing that on browser. You're mixing creatives with landing pages, and you can modify a landing page you want. Now with custom product pages, you have the same freedom. Not many channels allow you to do that, you know, and this is, I believe, one of the next steps. You know, in browser, how important that is, not the landing page, how we match with that. It's super important.
Mm-hmm.
And here you have to do the same in mobile. As we said, desktop is sometimes way ahead of mobile, although mobile thinks not. okay, so enough of that. And one last thing I had in mind. You guys tried in-housing DSPs, like actually trying to run self DSPs? Have you guys been like on mobile or even trying a bidder? Have you guys tried bidders?
I think we tried something with Beeswax before my time. So
okay.
But apart from this, we thought a lot about it, or at least I thought a lot about it. And I mean, it's the big question around in-housing is, for me at least, is it really worth the effort? Because there is a lot of effort when you're talking about setting up your own algorithm and so on. So you need a lot of people to work on
exactly
DSP, right? And then the question is, okay, I don't know, what do we pay for fees for managed self-server DSPs? It's something around 20%. So if it would be worth the effort, I would definitely do it. But this is something I'm not sure about, because also looking and looking at DSP companies and talking to other people who tried in-housing, it's really complex. And yeah, really not sure if it's worth the effort.
I tend to agree with you. Only maybe in the case of cross promotion, where you have many games, like these companies that they have tons of games, they can actually build an ad network or something, like get to that level. But if not, for UA purposes only, I have my doubts as well. Okay. So, Matthias, anything else you want to mention? We are wrapping it up now. Maybe you can tell us a little bit, how can people contact you if they want to reach out to you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. When you search for my name, I should show up there. Or I guess you will also find my business email via Google. So yeah, feel free to reach out to me if you have questions, comments, feedback. Always happy to have a discussion about programmatic and DSPs in special. So
it was great to have you. Really nice conversation. We looking at everything, you know, games yourself and DSPs, so it was pretty complete. Really liked it. Thank you so much for your time, and hope to see you soon. Okay,
yeah, thank you, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Until the next episode of Mobile Mastermind Sessions by Smatics, with more trends, insights, and updates from the industry brains of the programmatic advertising ecosystem. We do more than just deliver ads, so if you're ready to grow, visit smatics.com and just say hi.